long.
You've been busy.
Yes, you're right.
And you're still working hard.
Yes, we are.
Well, tell me a little bit about, happy Veterans Day.
Thank you very much. Same to you.
You attended some events yesterday. Talk about that.
Yeah, we had a Marine Corps birthday party at VFW Post 701 last night. Had about 300 Marines out there celebrating the 235th year of the United States Marine Corps. Had a good time, played some music, ate some cake, and, of course, consumed some beverages.
And what was the theme of conversation for those gentlemen and ladies?
Basically, it's a renewal of old friendships and comradeships that go back, clear back into World War II. I got an opportunity to visit with a number of friends that I've developed over the years who are former Marines. And according to the new Commandant of the Marine Corps, General Amos, we are now Marine veterans. We're not former Marines.
Indeed. Any discussion about the current conflicts going on where we have service people on duty?
Well, that's always the case every year and has been for the last 10 years. We talk about the number of Marines that we've lost in Iraq and Afghanistan. We have a ceremony that we perform in memory of them. Every year, it seems to be that we're losing more, and that's not good for the country, nor for the Corps itself. But I'm so impressed with these young people who are going over there doing the bidding of our government that I just can't say enough good about them.
When you hear stories on the news or see them in the newspaper, do you get flashbacks to times that you experienced?
Well, not so much that, because I didn't experience the same thing that these young people are experiencing over there today. The improvised explosive devices that are being used over there now are probably one of the most indiscriminate weapons to ever be used against our military. We've had to design and devise pieces of equipment to protect our soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines. And in this capacity, we've done a very good job, but we're still losing too many. Spartan Motors out here in Shalott has puts together the MRAP and the Cougar vehicle that transports our military personnel in Iraq and Afghanistan, and they've been doing a very good job.
I've always wondered about the rules of war, because there are those that we adhere to because when these rules were put together, we wanted to be ethical and moral people, God-fearing people, but the enemy doesn't play to the same rules in the same game.
No, the ROE rules of engagement are pretty standard in all branches of the military. Once the president or the commander-in-chief issues an order, it's normally obeyed on our side. We've found that most of the combatants that we're dealing with now aren't able to read, and therefore the Geneva Convention doesn't mean anything to them.
Well, let's talk about events that are going on today and tonight that you'd like to talk about.
I do know that today there will be a large Veterans Day parade out in Mason at the starts at the county fairgrounds. I don't know at this particular point how many units will be involved, but it should be a very large parade.
Well, let's talk about your work and one question before that. What do you think of Mr. Snyder being the governor? Do you think have you had a voice with his administration yet? Do you think that he will listen and heed your call? Because as we had talked about before, Jennifer Granholm and her administration didn't hear you when you came calling.
Yeah, that's true. Tony, to answer your question, we have had cursory meetings with Governor-elect Snyder's campaign organization in Ann Arbor prior to the election. And we met with Governor Snyder at the American Legion building, had an opportunity to ask him some rather pointed questions, and we were very, very impressed with the answers he gave us. We're hoping that after he hears us a little bit further, we have additional meetings scheduled with he and his campaign transition team. We're hoping that we will be able to reestablish our Department of Veterans Affairs and state government.
Right. You want an office, a seat.
Yes. In 1944, before the end of World War II, Governor Harry Kelly saw the need and understood fully the problem it was facing veterans coming back from World War II and organized the Department of Veterans Affairs to handle that need. Now, today, with a 10-year war in progress, and there doesn't appear to be any end in sight. We've employed over 2.8 million men and women into combat zones in the last 10 years. We're equaling numbers unseen in this country, and the tragic part of that is that we don't have the manpower or the capability to handle the needs of these veterans when they return. We're constantly trying to catch up on the backlogs. There's 1.5 million cases nationwide of veterans who need assistance from the Veterans Administration that are not being worked because the Veterans Administration doesn't have the manpower.
Well, the President Barack Obama is hoping to implement. It's been discussed that the plan is to bring a lot of the troops home, but there's still going to be a lot of troops in the field. But should these folks be coming back, there's even going to be a greater need. And to service them, you believe that you need to have an office and a seat with the governor's ear.
Yes, that's absolutely true. Tony, there's an interesting thing. We have just redone, if you will, the GI Bill. Right now, it's estimated that about 600,000 of our returning OEF and OIF soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines will be going to college. So one of the things that's approaching a crisis situation is the fact that in our college communities, we want the law enforcement people and the medical people to understand that you have a situation called traumatic brain injury and post-traumatic stress disorder. And it's going to be coming to these college communities because these young people will be going to school in those locations. And we want them to understand full well the need for having a correct service in place for these people.
Is there a plan to get in touch with at least the colleges and universities in this state and to help them with that training so that they can recognize and be able to deal with these types of situations?
Well, we're hoping to. We'll be going to Kalamazoo Valley Community College in December. We've just cleared a symposium down to the University of Michigan. We'll be working with any university or any college or any community that calls us to talk about this issue because it is such a major concern. There was a Harvard study done about 2 years ago that says that within the next 20 to 40 years, America is going to spend over $600 billion, that's with a B, dollars, to combat this problem that's been created by this 10-year war.
As we've talked about before, because I asked you, well, why weren't these problems documented during other conflicts, during World War I or World War II? And as you had informed me, well, Tony, soldiers didn't talk about that, and they were dismissed. But they are real, they are problems, and we better deal with them, and we better be ready to deal with them ahead of time, or we're going to be swamped.
That's exactly right. And you know, I give all credit to our World War II veterans. They came home and reestablished their lives, went right to work. There's an article in the paper today about a man in East Lansing, 90 years old. He came home and he reestablished his life. He went back to work. There wasn't social services in place for them to go to get the help that they needed, or there may have been a better statistical data kept on that. But post-traumatic stress disorder was classified as shell shock, and that came out of World War I and World War II. The tragic thing about post-traumatic stress disorder is it can occur at any time in a returning veteran, and it can lay dormant for a number of years before it surfaces. So families don't understand what's happening to them, and that's a problem.
One last question before we go to break. Are today's soldiers tougher? Are they more prepared to handle these situations, or do you think the soldiers that we had back in Vietnam and World War II more able to handle these situations?
Well, they've all received adequate training, first of all, to start with, but I don't know how you could train for post-traumatic stress disorder. I really don't. You can tell them that these are things that they should be concerned about. One of the things they're doing now is when they're discharged from the military, they're asking them to sign a slip indicating whether or not they have ever been involved in a combat situation where an IED was exploded. And if they sign that as yes, they have to remain in the service for another 90 days of evaluation. And if they've been there long enough, they've been in combat zone, they want to go home. So the answer that they're going to put on that form is certainly not going to be yes.
In your opinion, is the military, are the branches of the military taking care of these soldiers once they get out?
Once they determine that they are in need of help, yes, they are. The Department of Defense has done an adequate job. The Veterans Administration is trying to do a job with limited, of course, resources.
So why do you need a seat? Why do you need an office here in the state of Michigan if we have that taken care of on a national level?
Well, in the state of Michigan, according to the proclamation that I read last night from the governor, there's 703,000 veterans who live in his state, and only 274,000 of them belong in veterans organizations. For the past 10 years, we have gone to the legislature and asked them to increase our funding. We operate out of the Department of Military and Affairs here in the state. The sad part about it is for 10 years, we have not even received a cost of living allowance, which allows us to hire more people to go out and take care of these backlog cases. And tragically, no one stands up for us except we. We go to the appropriations committees and we ask them for more money to provide what we need, and we don't get it.
So this isn't done on a federal level. This is done state by state.
This is done state by state. Okay. And those 703,000, if we could get the ones who are not members of our veterans organizations to join, that would help us. We could speak with a louder voice. But they are, again, they're younger people, are trying to reestablish their lives and don't have time.